Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Midweek is tier 3, so, well, we're going to be talking Champions League and then a little bit of a Q and indeed A. The Q for tonight, Kristen.
Good evening.
And of course, the giant A for the night, Dave. Dave, you got to unmute yourself when you speak, otherwise you just look stupid.
Oh, yeah. God damn it. Yeah. I feel so stupid and right now. I said hello and everything.
He said hi. Oh. It sort of went awkward.
God damn it.
That long, awkward Skype silence when someone doesn't unmute in time. Anyway, there's been some long, awkward silences in the Champions League this week. Guys, where do you want to start? Should we start with a big game? Barcelona hosted Man City. And in the end, Chris, it was a bit of a blowout.
It was. I think Manchester City were punished for their mistakes in a very ruthless way, and a way that I sense will have taught Guardiola a fair amount. But for me, the real talking point here is that we watched Claudio Bravo have a bit of a stinker, in the sense that his red card, that whole situation, it just was a mess. And we talked about this earlier in the season. It now begs the question once again, how strict will Guardiola be sticking with this tactic, with this style, with the roles that he has so clearly defined for his players? And in what instances will he perhaps adapt ever so slightly and say to his players that they can deviate from the script?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it, Dave? Because tonight he really had to switch things up. And actually, they almost looked better with 10 men because things had to switch up so much. And the individual responsibility almost became more, because it felt a little bit like very early on the system for Man City was it was working, you know, the pressing was working, but then there was no end product after that because the players didn't seem to know how to attack so well.
Yeah, I think it was quite an interesting game. The City did look better with 10 men. I think that was because they were more in situations that the players do well in. Like a lot of those City players look like they're more counter-attacking players and players that do enjoy it on the ball. I'm talking Kevin De Bruyne, I'm talking Sterling, players that like to have free space to move into and free space to attack defenders in. And it just seems like Guardiola is still going down this very heavy route where it could have been interesting if he had set up quite defensively and looked at it on the counter-attack. A lot of pace in that Manchester City side, but it did press from the front. But it was quite disjoint. The press at the front looked good. It looked like it was a sort of diamond similar to how Tottenham pressed Manchester City with sort of two players in forward positions. It was Nolito and Kevin De Bruyne who looked like they were, you know, really pressing high. But the problem with that is there was nothing after the press. It felt really full frontal. And if Barcelona bypassed that first line of pressure, which they did exceptionally well through Ter Stegen playing lovely like clip balls to Luis Suarez and in sort of, you know, in the centre circle, they had nothing. And it looked like they were very, very, you know, 1v1 against Messi, Suarez and Neymar is a big risk. But City looked like against any player, they would have looked, you know, sort of suspect at the back against them. So it was one of those things where the wrong approach at the wrong time for Guardiola, and unfortunately Claudio Bravo, the red card really cost them in the end.
Yeah, ultimately also, Chris, the individual mistakes, not only Claudio Bravo, but also sort of some lazy-looking defending every now and again, did leave them quite open. John Stones allowing Neymar to just waltz past him at one point, getting tied in knots, which, you know, I guess is forgivable in a sense. He's coming up against Neymar. But at the same time, we see other players step up onto another level. And we sort of assume that Man City are on the same level as Barcelona, but tonight showed the difference between the team that Pep's got at City and the team that Barcelona have got.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. There's going to be a drop-off in that sense. It's unavoidable. I think in many regards, that's where he becomes truly tested as a coach, and where for perhaps anyone that doubts him, for anyone that thinks he's not as tactically brilliant as perhaps his fans do, this is where he proves that sentiment wrong. And I think he reaffirms his quality as a coach. He finds ways to adapt around the bumps. And also kind of mitigate, if not diminish, his squad's frailties. I think they're certainly present there. You can see them. I think to say it's simply a case of Barcelona having more talent, that to me is a little bit rudimentary and a little bit myopic. I think there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking in the groups now, obviously that puts Man City just 1 point ahead of Borussia Mönchengladbach, who obviously haven't got a great record in this group either. With the reverse fixtures, Dave, do you think that it's possible for City to make it through at the top of the group with Barcelona?
I think they'll definitely make it through. I think they'll come to the games against Celtic and Borussia Mönchengladbach. I can see next week that Barcelona doing the same sort of job on Manchester City, which is, you know, pretty much giving them a bit of a beating in a way, because it just looks so, they look so dominant, they look so fresh. Iniesta, Messi, Suarez, Neymar all look so good going forwards, and it just looked like City couldn't really deal with that.
And also, you know, they have Bravo now, so that overall system is done, isn't it?
Yeah, in a way. You know, Guardiola mentioning in his press conference afterwards, or the interview after the game, saying that, look, till the day that I finish coaching, I'm always going to ask my goalkeeper to play football and to play out the back, which is a fair point. But in a way, sometimes when you come up against Barcelona, who press so well, who know exactly what they're doing and move as such a fluid organism, it's difficult to play that same way. And sometimes you have to be adaptable. And unfortunately, Guardiola got caught out a bit, that what his adaptability wasn't, you know, what it needs to be a bit better, I think. He did the same thing, which was so frustrating, is he did the same thing a few seasons ago with Bayern Munich, where he went man-to-man with this Barcelona team, with Enrique's Barcelona team, and they got absolutely hammered. And again, it happened on the same thing, on the counter-attack. It's just one of those things where, you know, an old dog needs to learn new tricks. There is another way to skin the cat. And yeah, Guardiola has got possession football down to a T, but maybe he needs to be more flexible in terms of his styles.
Kristen, obviously, it was all very fluid for Barcelona tonight. The reverse fixtures, well, we'll find out what happens. That leaves the group quite nicely poised, though, doesn't it? And I don't know why Dave is actually so sure about Man City going through, because, well, as much as Celtic might want to sort of, you know, inflict another 3-all or something along those lines, you know, they're still within touching distance of getting a Europa League spot, even if it feels like, you know, the top of the group is out of distance. So it's not as if Man City aren't going to be challenged by these teams. Yeah, and they are vulnerable. So why can't Gladbach and Celtic both take them apart?
I think that's a very valid point. I think you watch Gladbach tonight, as I did. They are a very well-drilled counter-attacking team, or they're a team that can certainly play on the counter-attack, and they did so without Christensen in the heart of defence, and with Thorgan Hazard missing as well. So they, you could argue, a little bit adaptable. And I think for me, moving into that sort of final stage of this group, that's where it becomes so important to be adaptable and to be able to maybe ride the bumps that get thrown in your way, the missing players, the suspensions, that sort of thing. I think it would be very naive for Manchester City to underestimate Gladbach and to a lesser extent Celtic. I think, honestly, when I look back at that Celtic game, there's part of me that thinks it was adrenaline that carried Celtic over the line that night. Svechenko, the defender, talked about the need for their game tonight to have that kind of passion to it and have that intimidation factor that a full Celtic Park can bring. I look at that City game and I see that intimidation factor, and I just think that you put them in a situation where they are not the home team, they're not the dominant team in terms of atmosphere. I just think they come undone in a very similar way to the way they did tonight against Gladbach.
Very good point. Chris, what's your obsession with Thorgan Hazard?
Do you know, the funny thing is, there are players that you kind of start watching and start following for very bizarre reasons. And he was someone that I first caught an eye of at Zulf Waregem in Belgium when he went there. Because obviously when he arrives at Chelsea, everyone and their father thinks this is nepotism, undeniably this is nepotism. I don't think it was as straightforward as that. I think they did see a potential there. Now, the interesting thing and the thing that I wrote about this week is there's a buyback clause in his deal with Gladbach. At least that's what Chelsea claimed at the time and are claiming now. Gladbach, funnily enough, claim the exact opposite and say there is no buyback deal. And he's...
Well, I mean, just take a look at the contract, mate. It'll be there.
This is the funny thing. He's just starting to hit form. He's playing in a different position now for the most part. He's playing up front instead of maybe in attacking midfield where he usually did for Waregem and Gladbach early on. And it just seems to have facilitated him to being a bit more influential. And I think we're talking about Chelsea ushering in this new idea. I just look at that and think the reported buyback clause is 13 million. So let's just assume it's there, it exists. That's not a huge amount for a player that could have a very good career ahead of him and seems to be finally kind of developing into his own person and his own identity. I mean, he said in an interview with Christoph Terra, who very kindly translated his own article from I think it was Dutch into English for me, that he felt like that when he left Belgium, when he left Waregem. But honestly, I think watching him now, you're starting to see someone who appreciates who he is as a player and has his own identity. He's, as he says himself, he's not a dribbler like Eden is, and he does defend a bit more, which I thought was quite a funny thing to say. But overall, I think, yeah, he's a good player. It was a shame to see him miss out against Celtic tonight. Hopefully he'll be back for the next game against Barcelona.
Dave, obviously there's plenty more games going on in the Champions League tonight. Some really interesting results. We were watching the live game, so we only really got to cast our eye for moments across Barcelona and Man City. Obviously, PSG with some interesting scorers tonight against Basel, though. So not the most formidable of opposition. Edinson Cavani, Lucas Moura and Angel Di Maria getting those goals. Arsenal thrashing Ludogorets 6-0 at home, obviously. But Mesut Ozil with a hat-trick in 21 minutes.
So, mentioned on the live stream that it could be his first hat-trick of his career, and in fact it is. First hat-trick that Mesut Ozil scored has come for Arsenal, you know, being at Werder Bremen, being at Real Madrid, but also being a little bit unsure in front of goal, but, you know, tonight he's shown that he can do it. And if Mesut brought goals to his game, Jesus, he'd be the best player in the world because he has that ability to unlock a defence with a pass. And if he can just have that little bit of composure, you know, there's a few times that this season and the end of last season we saw him go through one-on-one and just not have the confidence to do it. But again, today's form, his ability to put the ball in the back of the net is very decent. But this Arsenal team is closing in on, you know, going very unnoticed, under the radar massively. So it could be interesting to see where they finish at the end of the season. And I put them in my top... Did I put them in top four? Maybe I even put them at fifth. But it seems at the moment like a big mistake, you know, with Theo Walcott in this form, Oxlade-Chamberlain getting a goal and assist. It looks good with Sanchez up front as well. So this Arsenal team is looking good, looking very, very good. And there could be the surprise package either in the Prem or in the Champions League, whichever one it is. Arsenal will explode.
And of course, that puts them in the driving seat at the top of the group with Paris Saint-Germain, who are also equal on 7 points, but their goal difference is inferior to Arsenal. Obviously, with Arsenal getting that 6-goal win tonight, one more win should get Arsenal over the line. Yeah, pretty much. Because obviously they'd be beating the sides that would then stay at the bottom of the table. Chris, tonight Napoli lost at home 3-2 to Besiktas.
This was not a good evening for Napoli. Yeah. It's the first time Besiktas have beat Italian opposition in a European competition, which is a hard thing to say this late at night.
Yeah, nice.
Abubakar is the one that makes the difference here. He hasn't had the greatest start. I think he hadn't actually scored a goal for Besiktas prior to tonight, so he kind of decided to kick off his season in Naples. It's a difficult one for Napoli. They're an interesting team to watch. I think you look at the Milik injury and you want to say that's what potentially derails their season. I'm not entirely sure of that. I think they had a difficult summer in a variety of ways. They lost Higuain, obviously. I think the Koulibaly situation was actually quite destabilising for him and also the football club, because again, it's that idea of, yes, they didn't take the player, but they did kind of unsettle him a little bit with all that talk. And I think just in general, it's a case of trying to manage a lot of moving parts and a lot of different competitions for Napoli, which is difficult for any club.
Yeah, good point. Let's move on, Dave, to where else should we go with this one? You know what, let's do it. Leicester on 9 points at the top of their group, Dave. Impressive from Leicester. 3 performances, 3 wins.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. It's incredible what they're doing. Obviously struggling in the Premier League. They've got more points in the Champions League than they've managed in the Premier League this season. So it shows that their focus is on the Premier competition. And it should be, you know, big chance for them. Can't really see them being anywhere near the top half of the table, to be quite honest. They just don't look very good in the Premier League, but it seems like they're coming alive in a pretty poor group, but a group that, you know, was a bit of a test, and they've come over it with flying colours, and I think that they will push forward, and they will. The thing with Leicester City is they're a team that would do so well in the knockout stages just because of how they set up, how they do look for those balls into the channels to Jamie Vardy, and they do look to go direct with Mahrez, who scored the winner last night. So it's one of those things that Leicester City, they're trundling along in the Champions League, and I think they will explode in the knockout stage and expect them to go far.
Wow.
Do you, Dave, just out of curiosity, you talk about the technical element there. Do you think their opposition, whoever that may be, adapts the way that they play to try and stifle that? Because again, it's going to be a two-leg situation. So you could almost kind of sit off for, I'm trying to think which is the better one, sit off for the home leg and just take the 0-0 and then approach it in a different way when Leicester are at home.
I think it's going to be, in terms of how Leicester City are going to play at home, I think they will be really aggressive. You know, Leicester City, they do sit off at times during the game, but they also are quite, they were good, especially last season, in terms of pressing high as a unit. Obviously, the big part of that was N'Golo Kanté's work rate and his ability to cover ground, and they haven't sort of found that yet, but they will find an answer, as it is, you know, Danny Drinkwater playing that aggressive role. They'll find an answer there, but it just seems it could be an option. You know, if you do want to play against Leicester City in the Champions League, you can't let space in behind. You've got to be able to deal with Jamie Vardy's runs. I think that's the big thing. If you can cut him off, if you do sit deep, what a great game! I'd love to see Atletico versus Leicester City. That'd be a quality game because both teams have a similar approach in how they do press and sit back and look for the counter attack and look for the space and the pace in behind. So that could be an absolute corker, like a 6-5 or something like that. So yeah, it's definitely an option that teams could take. They could sit and then try and play at home a bit differently. Yeah, it's a definitely a valid point.
Dave, they're saying there's going to be a 6-5 in one of Leicester's legs. Okay, fair enough. Hey, anything can happen. It's Champions League. Juventus sit top of their group with Sevilla. Sevilla, Chris, for this season, maybe won't drop into the Europa League.
Now, wouldn't that be a turnip in the box? It was actually a really nice goal. I don't know if you guys saw it as well. For me, it was kind of the icing on what was a sensational performance from Nasri. If I can remember correctly, I think he had 156 passes, which is the most in a Champions League game since Xavi in 2007.
Wow.
And look, I don't think Dinamo Zagreb are going to be in the final reaches of this competition. They're still involved and I think deserve a degree of respect because of that. So it's a very big performance from him. And in so many ways, you could argue he's followed the path of so many midfielders before him who go there, a bit like Benega, I guess, and sort of suffer a little bit of a rehabilitation or go through a little bit of a rehabilitation, if you will, and maybe get that confidence back and that feeling back. And he seems to be doing very well. You know, they got a draw last time out with Juventus as well. They seem to be adapting to this competition fairly well.
Yeah.
Even their kind of away form is really not terrible when you consider that, A, they picked up this win in Zagreb, albeit by a very narrow scoreline. They beat Leganes a few days prior to that. And then going even further back to last month, they get that draw in Turin. It's a very impressive period for not just Sevilla, I think, but also for Sampdoria.
Dave, talk to me a little bit about the situation that's happening in Spurs group, where Monaco are topping it on just 5 points, actually, making this group a really close one, with Moscow and Leverkusen just behind Spurs in second place. Spurs fielded a strong side, and Wanyama again had a great sort of one-man defensive midfield performance. But obviously, the further up the pitch, you'd say that maybe Spurs didn't show enough body in this game, or didn't show enough verve, and at times it felt a bit like certain players drifted in and out when actually you needed someone to take the game by the scruff of the neck and take it at this this strong Leverkusen side.
Yeah, it was a real interesting game. Spurs did better in the first half and poor in the second half. Leverkusen probably should have gone on to win the game. You know, big chance for Javier Hernandez, should have probably scored a fantastic save from Lloris, but you've got to put that in the corner. It's a goal. He put it in the middle of the goal save. Kiesling had a similar effort a bit later on, where it was a ball whipped in, a similar like open sort of goal situation, and completely fluffed his line. So it was a game that Spurs got a point out of. They did want to, you know, Pochettino did say he went to win the game, but unfortunately they didn't do that. I would say Wanyama was brilliant. Christian Eriksen and Ali were ahead of him in a sort of 4-1-4-1 shape. But the problem with Eriksen in these sorts of games when it's high press, high tempo, is that he sort of doesn't have that physicality to get out of those situations. And in these games, I'd like to see him further up the pitch. I'd like to see him on the left wing then, where he can drift in and get into the space when the press is, you know, where the press is vacated, attack that space. But Leverkusen were good. The back four was very good. Jonathan Tarr always impresses me whenever I watch him. Same with Kevin Kempfel. Aaron Gies was very good, the Chilean who's come back from a horrible knee injury. So this Leverkusen side is decent, but expect them to probably fall into the Europa League. I think Monaco will definitely go through. I saw them against Tottenham. They were awesome. They grabbed a late draw at CSK Moscow. Bernardo Silva again getting on the score sheet. He could be one to watch in the latter stages of the tournament as well. So I think it's going to be Monaco Spurs in that group, with Bayer Leverkusen third.
Can we take a second just to pour our sympathies out to Igor Akinfeev?
Yes, absolutely, Chris. Go ahead.
It's been a long while.
He's now gone, I believe, 40 games in the Champions League without keeping a clean sheet. In fact, November 1st will be the 10-year anniversary of his last clean sheet in the Champions League.
Poor man.
As if you weren't feeling sympathetic enough to him and his plight, Bernardo Silva scored in the 88th minute. So he was give or take 2 minutes from his first clean sheet. And you could see when Silva put the ball in how furious he was. I don't think just giving up a goal that means CSK don't get the 3 points, but also the fact that he's lost his clean sheet.
Have we covered everything there? Is there anything we need to cover? I mean, Real Madrid sort of, it's actually pretty boring against Legia Warszawa.
I think the slight story in there is just the emergence again of Marcus Asensio, you know, player that was away on loan last season, has come back and he's just stolen the show, you know, scored in his first, I think, Super Cup game, his first La Liga game, and now his first Champions League game. But he really ran the show. In the first half, he completed more passes than Toni Kroos, which is pretty outstanding for him, for a central midfielder, considering how, you know, how good Toni Kroos is on the ball. And, you know, took his goal very well, lovely layoff from Ronaldo, just an all-round talented player. And something that's going to be, you know, in the next 10 years of world football, is going to be at the forefront for Spain and for Real Madrid.
Very good point. Want to comment real quick on Dortmund? Obviously, Dortmund got an away win against Sporting. They went up 2-0 in the first half. Aubameyang and Weigl, and they, you know what, they hit them early on. 9 minutes in, Aubameyang just with a beautifully chipped goal, and then Weigl sort of hitting Sporting just as they were coming back into the match in the second half. Sporting tried to fight their way back into it, but ultimately didn't have enough. Chris, you did think that Sporting at least had something in this, but I feel like it was the sort of the number 10 area that let them down.
Yeah, definitely. Fantastic point. I think I must confess it was very much optimism that led me to that prediction based on what I had seen at the game against Real Madrid, because they were so organised, they were so disciplined. What I forgot to perhaps consider is the frightening pace that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has at his disposal. And, you know, you look at his goal, and it takes skill. I'm not saying that it's purely athleticism. it also frightens me how quickly he moves across the ground. I think, you know, if I'm Sporting and I'm trying to take a positive, I thought William Carvalho was fairly decent again. I think, you know, he's another one that I sometimes wonder, and tell me if you disagree with this, the Jean Moutinho, Miguel Veloche generation bred a sort of uncertainty amongst us when it comes to Portuguese midfielders and how we view them and whether they are just flat track bullies in their own domestic league. That can occasionally turn it on when the Champions League cameras are on. And at times I watched Carvalho and I thought, yeah, he kind of fits into that mould. He's great against Estoril or Paco de Ferreira, but can he do it consistently? And in fairness, from what I've watched him this season, he has been able to do that. There are certainly times I'm a little bit uncertain with him. Euros, he looked a little bit gassed at key points. But I think overall, yeah, he's a very talented midfielder, and I'd be surprised if someone in that upper echelon of European teams isn't tempted at some point this season.
Very, very good point. Well, let us know your comments and your thoughts on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you at @TheFrontThree. On Twitter. Dave, before we move on, you've won money, first of all, tonight. But secondly, there is obviously the excitement of FanDuel for us. And FanDuel is going pretty well for some of our fans out there. Is it still going well for you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's ticking along. Hopefully I'll close in on the £1 million come the end of the next month. I think it's a good platform to get your players in and sign them up. I think this week, I think Ander Herrera may be a good shout. I don't think his price will be that high. And has been running the show for Manchester United. And of course, FanDuel does take other actions other than goals and assists. So it could be a good thing to throw Herrera in there. Paul Pogba looks like he's going to explode. Again, Liverpool look good. Maybe you throw in a Sadio Mane again. No, it's all exciting, all round exciting.
Herrera is a good choice, actually, Dave. He's only 6.7 million, which is actually half of some of the guys who are doing really, really well in there. And obviously, there's also the likes of Sterling in there. De Bruyne, Coutinho is obviously a fantastic buy, and Payet is also a good one. But it's about finding those matches in there. You can head over to FanDuel, and it's a little bit more detailed than other ones. You know, it's not just about the goals and all sorts of things. There's better stuff to be judging the players on. So maybe it rewards you a little bit more as a good player of fantasy football. Don't just take the top guys. Get in there. You know, go in and find some of the more hidden gems, if you like. And if you do or haven't already headed or gone over to FanDuel, then get over there, fanduel.co.uk. Put in our code IAMTheHole. You sign up and you get a nice offer from us. But you need to be over there to get the offer. And it is a good offer, by the way. You can get money back and you can also get matched on the money that you put in. So FanDuel are generous in that sense. If you do head over there, when you do put your money in and you are in the UK, then head over to the £6,000 fan favourite and you could win a share of that £6,000, which is actually good. Now, just earlier tonight, actually, Adam, who's not on the podcast tonight, did end up having a chat with an interesting journalist who's based in Madrid. It was Robbie Dunn, who actually covers all things Atletico, if you like. So Adam spoke to him. You can find the link to Robbie's Twitter in the description if you want to follow up on that. And of course, we always enjoy having other journalists on. So thank you very much, Robbie, for coming on. This is Robbie speaking to Adam.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
About Atletico.
So journalist Robbie Dunn joins me now from Madrid. Robbie, welcome to the Front Three. Hi, how are you doing, Adam? Thanks for having me on.
Very well. Thanks for coming on. So we're here to talk about Atletico Madrid, of course. A 1-0 win at FC Rostov tonight. Rostov losing at home for the first time since May 2015. And Atletico Madrid taking a huge step towards qualification from Group D by keeping up their 100% record in the Champions League. What did you make of the game tonight, Robbie, and their performance?
Yeah, it was typical of Atletico this season. They've been quite attack minded, and it was always going to be that case against Rostov. It was it went pretty much as I expected. I discussed it with some friends of mine, and we were talking about how it was never going to be a 3 or 4 nil. It was always going to be, there was only going to be a goal, maybe two in it. It was I was just looking at the temperature there. It was like 2 degrees in the deep south of Russia. Simeone had his big jacket on. Koke was wearing his gloves, and Rostov just kind of took the sting out of everything Atletico were doing. Atletico fluffed a couple of chances, but yeah, pretty much it went exactly as we thought it would. 3 points in the bag, and yeah, nobody's going to be talking about this game. It come the business end of the Champions League, but it's a vital 3 points, and it keeps them that step ahead of Bayern.
His advice for 3 points, yeah. 3-1-0 wins in a row now, 3 clean sheets, and as you say, looks like it puts them in a good position, essentially, to finish top of Group D, ahead of Bayern Munich. I mean, do you think they will end up topping the group?
It's going to come down to Atletico struggle against PSV in their first game that was in Eindhoven. So they're going to bring them back to the Calderon. I'd imagine they get 3 points there, and then they play Bayern at the Allianz Arena, which a draw is going to do them in order to qualify at the top, provided obviously they beat Rostov at the Calderon as well, and Bayern win. So historically and in the recent past, Bayern have been favourites, but and it's just a kind of a blip that they had, and that 1-0 victory over that Atletico had over them at the Calderon a couple of weeks ago might have been considered a blip. But I'd have full faith in Atletico actually going to the Allianz Arena and getting maybe not 3 points, but definitely a point there. So I just think Atletico, and I've written about this in other places, that I think Atletico are the best team in Europe at the moment, so they'll be fully confident that they could finish top of the group.
I mean, that's high praise, the best team in Europe. They are unbeaten, though, in 10 games this season. Before tonight, they've won 7 of them. And, I mean, as we're saying, they're 3 clean sheets in the Champions League. I mean, they've always been tight at the back under Simeone, but they seem to have added a certain attacking verve this season. I mean, they've scored 4 or more in the league 3 times this season, whereas last season they only managed that once. I mean, what's changed or what's evolved under Simeone at Atletico this season?
And this is something that I wrote. They drew their first 2 games, the first one against Alaves and the second against Leganés, 2 newly promoted sides, two teams who have since proved this kind of wrong. And I know we're not even halfway into the season, but Alaves are doing quite well and Leganés are not as bad as people thought they would be. But they drew those first 2 games, and everyone was calling for Simeone to change it. I mean, he's got 4 of, maybe not savage, but as a collective, he fits right into that. He's got 4 and one of the best goalkeepers in Europe at the back. It was kind of like loosen the reins a small bit, let them play a little bit of football. You've got Diego Godin, you've got Felipe Luis, you've got Juan Fran, you've got Oblak there. You are safe. Just let the team play. He was playing Gabby, and he was playing another defensive-minded midfielder, and then with Koke out in the left in a 4. Koke has since come inside and is absolutely dictating every game that he plays now. He's creative. He's a bundle of energy. He moves the chains, as they say in American football. He's just their spark there in the middle of the field, and then so. In place of him out on the left, they now have Yannick Ferreira Carrasco, who has scored 5 goals in his last 4 games, which is equals the number of goals he scored in the 50 prior to that. He's on fire. He's just phenomenal this season. He's out on the left, providing that width, helping Felipe Luis on the left. And then you've got down the right-hand side, you've got Angel Correa or Griezmann, whoever happens to be playing on that side, with Koke in the centre, and then maybe a defensive Gabby or Saul, depending on who it is on that day. So you've got loads of width, loads of creativity in the centre. Griezmann up front and Gamero lightning quick, so you can't ever rule them out in terms of getting in behind your defence and things. They're just playing some phenomenal football at the moment, and Simeone has loosened the reins, and he's put his trust in his back four and Oblak, and they are reaping the rewards.
Yeah, and you actually wrote a very interesting piece earlier this week on News Talk about how Atletico Madrid are essentially looking more assured than ever at a time when there are some question marks potentially over Barcelona and Real Madrid's identity on the pitch.
Well, watching Barcelona last weekend, he's got Alex Vidal is after falling out of favour. He was kind of in and out, but it's almost been as good as confirmed now that Vidal will be gone in January. And if not gone, he'll be sent down to the very depths of the squad, or maybe train with the reserves or the B team or the 21s or whatever they happen to do there. But he had to go for 3-4-3 because Sergio Roberto, who's his other right-back option, is injured. Jordi Alba on the left was injured, and he was rushed back actually tonight and got taken off after 10 minutes. Now, I didn't see that game because I was watching Atletico, but I presume if he was taken off after 10 minutes, it wasn't because he was playing poorly. He's after re-injuring himself. He's after switching to a 3-4-3, and he's they're not entirely Sergio. Okay, I'm not going to go and slate Sergio Busquets. He's an excellent one, probably the best defensive midfielder in Europe and the world. But he was going through a kind of a difficult spell, and Messi was injured, and they were relying heavily on that front three, which is absolutely fine. That's what you do when you have three world class players up front. But in defence, they weren't entirely sure but it just seems like they're an injury or two away from a full-blown crisis. They haven't got a settled 11 and things like that. And it's the same with Real Madrid. They're an injury or two away from a crisis. Casemiro has been playing there, and a lot of the time, like we saw with Makélélé leaving, I mean, Perez, who we believe dictates kind of at some level who plays and who doesn't play. Casemiro got in there and was proving himself to be kind of a vital cog in that wheel. He got injured, and all of a sudden you're left with like the likes of James, Isco, Cruz, Modric, all excellent midfielders in their own right, but they don't have that kind of defensive-minded destroyer, I suppose, like they had in Casemiro. So likewise, their midfield is an injury or two away from full-blown crisis. Whereas Atletico, they've got the strength and depth. They've got, in place of Juan Fran, they've got Sime Versalco, who came over from Sassuolo in the summer, who's been excellent anytime he's stepped in. Granted, he's only played a couple of times. They've got Jose Jimenez. They've got Lucas Fernandez, two of the up-and-coming young defenders in world football. And they've been excellent when they come in. And I could go through the whole squad. They've got excellent strength and depth. They've got options. Again, tonight, they switched Angel Correa for Gamero, and within 5 minutes of that switch, they were a goal up, and they were off for another 3 points. And it just seems like Simeone's got options. He's got a few tricks up his sleeve. They can play defensive football and shut people down, and they can also go on the attack when needs be. It's kind of like when you ever play Football Manager, like I often think it is, as to how fluid you are at how many different tactics and formations. And if you looked at Atletico right now, they'd be fluid in probably two or three in the 4-3-3, 4-4-2, maybe a kind of a 4-2-3-1 with Koke as the number 10. Mm. I mean, they've got options, they've got strength and depth, and they all seem to be on the same page, which I just can't say for Barcelona and Real Madrid right now.
I think you make a good point there in terms of the balance as well. You're saying that Real Madrid and Barcelona haven't quite found that balance yet this season, struggling with injuries and selection issues. But like you say, Atletico Madrid absolutely rock solid at the back, and Simeone's managed to encourage some more attacking football as well. I mean, you describe them as the best team in Europe, and as you say, we're not that far into the season. But do you think, looking at this team and looking how they're shaping up, looking at that balance, that perhaps this season could be the season once again where they go that extra step further? We obviously saw them get into the final of the Champions League this year. Do you think they could go that extra step further and potentially win it? And similarly in the league, can they once again become champions, do you think?
Yeah, I would have to say yes. And I mean, as you say, it is early doors, but I don't think I've seen a team as resilient as Atletico in recent memory. I mean, they got beaten in the Champions League in 2013-14 final by Real Madrid, despite winning the league. They had a really poor year by their growing, increasingly high standards the year after. They came back, got to a Champions League final next year when everyone figured it was a flash in the pan. They had sold Diego Costa, Felipe Luis was gone, players like that. And everyone figured that was Atletico's day in the sun, and that's it, their 15 minutes of fame are over. They evolved at that point, came back, made it to another Champions League final. And Juan Fran said, he was the one that missed the penalty in the final that ultimately led to them being beaten. He said that we will win a Champions League. It's what they live for, like, you know, and I know that's kind of maybe a little bit cliche, but they are absolutely adamant that they're going to win a Champions League. And I genuinely believe that they can sense that there's something big coming down the road. They can see, kind of like last year in the Premier League, some of the teams, City, weren't kind of firing on all cylinders, a couple of teams like that. Atletico know that it's theirs for the taking. They know that they can go, and if they want, they can grab it. So essentially, I think they could, and it might sound silly. At the end of the year, you can have me back on, and you can throw all these back at me. But I think they are in a good position right now to be definitely favourites for a treble.
Wow, that is a big shout. Big bold chat there from Robbie Dunn in Madrid. Robbie, thank you so much for joining us on the Front Three. We'll definitely be speaking to you again very soon. But until then, where can the listeners find more of your work?
Find me at Robbie J. Dunn on Twitter. And come and say hello, and Opa Atleti.
Excellent stuff there from Robbie Dunn. And Adam, thank you very much for coming on, Robbie. If you want to head over there, hit Robbie J. Dunn on Twitter. Well worth a look. Now, guys, let's get down to it. There are some good questions that we've got in tonight. And after all the Champions League excitement, we get a little bit gassed on the show. And we like to get your questions. Chris has been very active for TF3 this week, so it's good to have you on. Finally, we got Chris a login for the Front 3 Twitter. And as you can see, it's already better.
And what was my first act? To accidentally include my own account in the tweet.
That's not awkward at all. Of course, accidentally, yes. There are some really good questions in here, so let's just get straight down to it, guys. Don't forget, head over to FanDuel, # IAmTheHole, put in the code IAmTheHole. What current examples, this one's from Harry Chamberlain, what current examples are there of triquartistas? This was a term which has been made popular, of course, by Football Manager more recently. Not many people use that as a term, but it's become more popular, Dave. Are you a fan of the triquartista, and is it still a prominent role?
Yeah, well, there's a young lad over in, I think he plays for Roma, Francesco something. Francesco. No, I don't have his second name, but it's Francesco, plays for Roma, who's, he's doing pretty well at the moment, big impact off the bench. And really, you know, carrying Roma, who have been pushing on quite well so far in Serie A under Spalletti. In terms of young ones, Chris, have you got any young triquartistas that you'd like to throw forward?
It does seem like quite an advanced role, doesn't it? So it would be unusual to have a triquartista,
I think I was going to say not a young one necessarily, but I kind of consider Mesut Ozil. When I define what that position is, he is sort of that. It's someone that plays in that number 10 role, but then also advances past the forward and contributes with goals. Now, in fairness, he doesn't get as many goals as maybe others would like. But I think there's definitely elements of it there.
Mm. It's kind of someone who plays... the best way I can think of describing it is a withdrawn role from attack.
Mm. It's like a forward with midfield duties, almost.
Yeah.
So Dybala. From Juventus.
But then he gets quite far forward, Dave, so he can't really be a triquartista, can he?
I don't know, yeah. I think the triquartista, it's an older position. Now we're seeing players like Antoine Griezmann that are more hybrid midfielder, goal scorers, than the triquartista, the hybrid forward creator. Yeah,
that's the thing is, though, you're encouraged to go forward now. So it's almost coached out of you in a sense, or coaches don't require it so much. You could say players who are good, who would be good to play. I feel like Toni Kroos would be a good triquartista.
potentially you could say maybe in a way Roberto Firmino is a little bit of a Chuck Bautista. But then again, he's say he was more of a false nine, right?
Could you class Modric as a Chuck Bautista sort of role?
Nah, he's a lot deeper, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess so.
Midfield metronome.
Yeah, you're right. Let's go for another question here, shall we?
I think in years gone by, Griezmann would have been considered that. I think it's a role that's kind of... This is the thing, as time goes on, we really do narrow down the different ways in the different ways in which positions play to the point where maybe what was a Trek Artista now is not 5 years ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really good point, actually, Chris. Let me put it here. Varun Joshi writes in. This is a really good one. Who is the best current player to not win the UCL? They did this on the Two Substitutes podcast, apparently.
Antoine Griezmann.
Interesting. Dave, straight off the top of his head there. What about you, Chris?
It's hard to look past Griezmann, isn't it?
It is. I'm trying to think of other people.
Kevin De Bruyne would be up there as well.
I would suppose so. Anyone else? I mean, who else could you put in? Because a lot of the best players have won it. And they're in that top list. Because it's also been shared out more recently than maybe we think.
Has Alexis Sanchez ever won the Champions League? I don't think, but he won it when at Barcelona.
He must have won it at Barcelona, Dave.
I don't think he did. I think he was in the period where they didn't win it. Let me double check.
Yeah, you probably want to double check that one. Obviously, Luis Suarez has won it. Obviously, Neymar, Messi have both won it. It's probably Premier League players, really, isn't it? That haven't won it.
Alexis Sanchez hasn't won it. He's won Liga Copa del Rey, Super Copa de España, the UEFA Super Cup, and the FIFA Club World Cup. He basically came in 2011 after that Barcelona team that destroyed United.
That is unfortunate. And of course, he went to Arsenal to win a Champions League, so that's awkward.
It's all starting.
Absolutely, Dave. That's the positivity that we're looking for. Thank you for a good question, Varun. I'd also love to hear the question on your podcast. Lawrence, as you mentioned the NBA previously, what do you think of KD's decision? I think he was advised... well to go to a team where he probably will win a championship, but I also feel a little bit like he should have. I mean, Kevin Durant and his move to Golden State, I think he'll be a massive hit there, but at the same time I feel like people are going to feel like he let the other teams down by not maybe sharing around some of the talent, if you like. Anyway, which sometimes you feel is a little bit the case at Barcelona. John says, why doesn't there seem to be talk about Diego Costa being one of the best players in the EPL this season with 7 goals in 8 games? Anyone want to answer that one for me?
I think I mentioned it on our live show, Lawrence, didn't I? I said Diego Costa's at Chelsea and you were like, nah, Chelsea will get bowled over. Yeah, I think he's gone back to the Diego Costa of old that's now... I don't know, it seems like defenders seem to have forgotten what he does, going to the left channel, cut onto his right foot, and that seems to be working again. It's like it seems that they've just like forgotten that Diego Costa always seems to do that. He always seems to pull that move. But it seems like Chelsea are more geared towards being a slightly more direct, maybe, and involving him more in the play. So I think it's with Chelsea's forms improving, Diego Costa's forms going to improve. But there are reports actually today that he's fallen out with Conte, which again would be quite interesting.
It really would not be in Conte's interest to fall out with Diego Costa right now.
No.
People always love going on about that. Alex Skolitsyn says, do you guys support your rival clubs in European competitions?
Absolutely not.
Really? I root for United in Europa League.
Don't do it, Lawrence. They're evil.
Chris, what about you? Do you root for Sunderland when they're in Europe?
It's not anything I've had to consider, which is not a dig, it's just the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I do? I do. Not all teams. And I guess maybe it's just because I know a little bit more about them, or I sort of follow them a little bit more closely, you end up just feeling a little bit more for the players, or less. Because obviously when Ashley Cole went to Chelsea, just really didn't like him. This one comes from Dan. How would Leicester's season be reviewed if they won the UCL but got relegated? An amazing season or not? Of course, an amazing season. It's not really a hard question, is it? Hashtag I am the whole. Thanks, Dan. We appreciate your question. It is a good question, but it is it's a concept which we don't really need to worry about. But Mohamed Akrel says, what do you make of Arsenal's attack? What kind of system do they play? Quite fluid. Correct, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's quite fluid with, Sanchez is playing this sort of striker role again. I mentioned that it could be good for him to play as a second striker behind Giroud, but maybe not as a striker, but he has looked really, really good. You've got Mesut behind as a number 10, as the sort of the creator. But again, today, he was running ahead of Sanchez at times. And, you know, two of his goals came from counter-attack, which looked really good. And again, Alex Iwobi, I'm a big fan of Alex Iwobi, very talented young midfielder who is very comfortable inside, very comfortable on the left-hand side. And then on the right-hand side, it's Theo Walcott at the moment, who is, again, busting a gut to get in behind. So it's got the right sort of foundation of players coming to the ball and players going away from the ball, but it's looking very, very good. And with Santi Cazorla pulling the strings from deep, whew, decent side, very decent side.
Okay, let's look a little bit further down here. Did you, Kareem Solomon, an excellent contributor to Twitter this week and to obviously our video content, do you think we'll be a UCL winner from a league other than the Big Five anytime soon? If so, where will they be from? Ooh, you're going to have to be looking. Obviously, that's. It's difficult to see, isn't it? Just because of the funding for those top sides and the strength of the squad and the depth of them. It just shows later on, doesn't it?
It's got to be a side potentially like a Russian side or potentially Benfica, who have looked good in recent years in the Champions League and have produced a lot of talent. You know, Renato Sanchez being last on the conveyor belt, but it is that they have to get to a stage where they have got enough money in the bank that they can start to keep talent like that, and then they will sort of push forward. There's a few players coming through at the moment that are, you know, have the sort of the sky is the limit for them, and same with Sporting in a way, but it's just difficult because, like you mentioned before, the big clubs come pinching and they just steal all the good ones.
This one's a good question. Jed Brandon says, how does Tottenham become more clinical with their finishing? Chris?
I think what I would like to see relative to Tottenham is their shot location data. If I can deviate into the analytics for a second, I think you can often learn a lot from that. And in terms of whether the team is taking its best opportunities and actually giving itself the best opportunity to score. Assuming they are, I think honestly it just comes down to quality of player. I don't think this is one thing. I mean, I look at, and it's only because I know him very well, Moussa Sissoko, he's not really a goal scorer as I know him. So you've got to question if that's part of the problem. I think, honestly, looking at Spurs this season, I just debate if they're putting in enough crosses for someone like Vincent Janssen. To me, he seems a very traditional forward and someone that really needs service from wide if he's going to make the most of his talent. It's been a lot of stuff into feet. Now, that works sometimes. I think if you look at the game against Middlesbrough, the goal for Son is off the back of some really smart holder play by Janssen. That's not really doing a great deal for him now. And when Son's maybe not doing what he's supposed to or performing to the level we expect, that's when maybe you need to just adapt and tweak things slightly to give everyone a chance to score.
Very good point. Matt Fotia says, why is Leicester prioritising the UCL a bad thing? Likely they won't make it again in the near future. Why not cash in? It does make a good point, although you'd be maybe more savvy to try to have a longer-term medium range in the league and sort of focus on staying at the very top level so that you don't have maybe some short-term gains where in the long term you just crash out of both massive competitions, including the Premier League, because you essentially burnt out. Although maybe you could also make the argument that making memories for your fans is incredible and that's what you want to do. Why isn't the 96 to 98 Juve side ever mentioned as one of the greatest ever despite reaching three Champions League finals? I think there was
a question from Fabrizio by chance.
I do sort of think, it was from Gabriel. I do think that league was marred somewhat at that time by what was going on. behind the scenes in terms of, you know, money and drugs and all sorts of things. I think some people sort of saw that as doping in many different ways, and that the corruption sort of ruined the on-field thing. I think essentially it's a question of the Italians were just stupid enough to get caught. They're not the only ones who are doing that. But I mean, it was a great side, wasn't it, Chris? I mean, that was a very powerful team. And he's right in saying, you know, they reached three CL finals.
They did. I think, in fact, one of them was the first Champions League final I can remember watching.
Yeah.
So Cameron must be a decent age as well, I can assume.
at least in his late 20s.
Yeah, at least. You're right, it is a good squad. I think maybe the reason he's saying that is partly because he's looking with the clarity of hindsight. And you look at some of the names in there, you look at Conte, Inzaghi, Del Piero, Deschamps was in there as well. You had,
jeez, I forgot about Deschamps.
That's Zinedine Zidane.
Zidane and Davids, I think, was in that year as well, and Ciro Ferrara. Even Angelo Peruzzi, someone who, again, you could argue fits into that mould of someone that maybe isn't discussed as highly as he should be, given the career and achievements that he had. So, yeah, I think it's a fair point. I think if I'm trying to form a case against them, it's that often now, I think, when we look back historically, we try to focus on the teams that either broke from the convention of their time or advanced the game in some way. And I'm just not sure if that Juventus side did that. I think accomplishment-wise, they did a good job.
They were more dogged, right? They were more like, you know, Lippi is a defensive manager, and that's how they set up. You know, they did have the talents of Zidane, of Del Piero, of X, Y, and Z, but it was his systems were to negate the opposition and try and get that advantage. And it's a very good way, and it is the Mourinho type way, and I do like that approach. But I think that's why they weren't remembered, because they didn't play, like Chris said, they didn't play an expansive style, or they didn't play a style that was well known. They played a style to win the game. It was very, very Italian. So it's one of those things. Very, very interesting. You know, they played a 4-3-3 against Ajax. They played a 4-4-2 diamond against Borussia Dortmund. And then they played a 3-5-2 against Real Madrid. So they were tactically very, very diverse and a very interesting side.
I think as well, you have to remember that the old saying that history is often written by the victor. And of those three finals, they only won one. And we've talked about even fairly recently that Argentina side that lost three finals in a row, and how, despite the exceptional talent that they have and the fact that they played some beautiful stuff at times, most notably in the Copa America group stages this year, they played some beautiful stuff. They tore teams apart. They didn't achieve the pinnacle, or they didn't win. And yes, Juventus won one of those three, but they lost two as well. And I think that goes down in the history books and in terms of how we remember them.
People Please says, form is temporary, but class is equally temporary. In modern football, new managers' philosophies only seems to only do it for 2 to 3 years. Seems to be focusing just on maybe a Mourinho or Bielsa-esque sort of philosophy there, because obviously it does burn players out. I don't think it takes away from the class. I think quite a few players have performed at the very top level for a while, but it is true to say, Dave, that there are a few managers out there who are like supernovas at each club, and Mourinho is the most obvious example of that most recently.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think with managers especially, it's difficult to, the issue with the manager, it's that longevity, and that is the hard thing to get. That is the thing that separates you from the good managers to the great managers. Obviously, Sir Alex Ferguson is definitely in the great managers category because of his, you know, how long he was there. But I do think some managers have tactical ideas that work in some tactical environments. And unfortunately, when the tactical environment changes, they don't move on with it. And that's the thing. You've always got to evolve yourself as a manager. And that is going to be the big test at Manchester United for Mourinho. And I hope he passes it with flying colours. The next step is next evolution of how Mourinho can, you know, move forward. And again, it's very interesting. Like Guardiola. Guardiola needs to evolve again at Manchester City.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's a case of saying that just because a manager's left a club doesn't mean that his blueprint or his philosophy does not remain there. Mm. We saw that at Chelsea, yeah, exactly, for almost a decade. That, you know, after Mourinho left, he laid the foundations for other managers who then went on to win Premier Leagues, FA Cups. You know, Carlo Ancelotti came in, Hiddink came in,
Champions Leagues.
Champions League, all sorts of things. Because he laid the foundations with Cech and Terry and Lampard and other players, and essentially gave people a work ethic and a belief.
It's, dogged, wasn't it? It was so dogged. You go back to the Champions League that they won when they played Barcelona. Their system looked so much like how Man United played against Liverpool on Monday night. It was the same thing.
Yeah.
Like a back six, two central midfielders, one player off another player. Press when they get the when the opponents get into the final third, and cover the fullbacks. And it was the same approach, but that was, you know, that's very Mourinho-esque. And again, that was the team that won the Champions League under Di Matteo.
Yes. Interesting questions coming in. Fire away, friends, says Kristen, and some of his friends have replied. Someone said, did Testegen get paid off tonight? No. If a manager of your club got sacked today, who would you like to hire? That's from Carlos, and he says he would go for Pochettino. Interesting that you think you could tempt Pochettino to your club. Who would you guys go for?
I saw this question and hated it.
Why?
Because it was the equivalent of being asked, if things didn't work out with you and your current girlfriend, who would you like to date instead?
Got you.
That's how I feel about Rafa Benitez.
Yeah, because you're very happy with Rafa.
Oh, I'm bloody delighted.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, people may look at that in real simple terms and say, oh, they're winning, of course. Not in the slightest. For the first time since Chris Hughton, and going back after that, Sir Bobby Robson, Kevin Keegan, I have a manager that I'm genuinely proud of. And not even because of what he's achieved. People, again, will think, oh, well, he won the Champions League. This makes sense. He has a great record. Not in the slightest, again. It's all about the fact that he engages with the community. He is so respectful. He is just a very nice person. And he never blames anyone else. He takes responsibility. And it's just, it's very nice to see. It's very nice to have a coach at the club that almost seems to respect not only supporters, the club that they're at, but the opportunity they've been given. They see it as sort of a, you know, I've done well to get this opportunity. And I think that's what everybody wants at the end of the day. They want to feel as if their club is valued by the person that is in charge.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah, having said that, Dave, who would you want?
Portuguese manager, named by Jose, second name Mourinho. No, I think I echo what Chris is saying. It's a bit weird. I would like Thomas Tuchel or Pochettino. I think they'd be two very good options for Manchester United. Oh, but I'd like Mourinho to stay there for 20 years.
Good luck with that. Is Umtiti reaching world-class level, Dave? Very quick.
Yeah, I think so. He was excellent tonight. Brilliant performance against Manchester City. Did everything right. Closed the space at the right time. Made the block when he needed to. Went wide. Was brilliant on the ball. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. A big fan of Samuel Umtiti.
Matt Browniecake did ask, how four games without a win? Are City in trouble? We have kind of answered that already. I personally do think there is a little bit of trouble there because the individuals don't seem to be able to enact the system that Pep wants, but there are other ways to look at it as well. What is the reason for Arsenal's recent upturn in form? Sanchez playing up front and Walcott finally proving his worth? That one also from Matt Brownie Cake. It's just making a good point there.
I think it's just the players, isn't it? They're playing every week. They're playing together as a team. The team's not changing too much. And especially with the front four players, and they look like they're in form. They look like they're confident. I think it's just that team chemistry in it almost.
Good point. Where else can we go with this one? John Shin. Hey, John. How you doing? Good guy. Is Pep missing Joe Hart right now? Anyone want to look at that? Anyone else want to mention Joe Hart out there?
Poor old Harty.
Yes. although, yeah, I kind of feel like live by the sword, die by the sword. And Pep prefers to live by the sword than die by sort of British gun. How does Pep come back from this form? Does he need to adjust the system a bit, or are personnel just not performing adequately? That was from Russian Roulette. We've, again, sort of answered that one already in our conversation.
Aguero.
Yeah, very good point there, Dave.
Simple. Get him in the side.
No, we've also sort of answered Alden's question, which is, could City slide into third in this group? kind of Leicester, there's got to be another question here somewhere which we can finish on, which is very positive and strong. This one's a good one. Is the media rhetoric that Liverpool versus United was boring just an example of lazy journalism? I enjoyed it, said Osbert Moore. Dave?
Yeah, massively. It was a very interesting game tactically. And I think that's one of the positive things of the Premier League this season. We're going to see contrasting styles. But for United to keep Liverpool to, you know, to get a clean sheet away at Anfield in their current form, you know, it's well done to Jose Mourinho. And I think well done to the United players. But also, Liverpool players were good. You know, that Coutinho shot from the edge of the area was a nice thing to watch. John Henderson's improvement has been good. So the game was of decent quality. But if Adam Lallana had started, I reckon Liverpool would have got it, would have won the game.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Anyway, guys, thanks a lot for getting your questions in. We will also be starting up some new stuff on the YouTube channel where we answer questions that maybe didn't get answered on the podcast. Sometimes we just walk away and we have a little bit more time to think, because obviously we're sifting through this on the very same night. So we're going to go through some of your concepts at some point. So over the next few weeks, there is going to be a little bit more stuff going up on the channel, including Dave and Chris and all sorts of things. Anyway, it's been good to have you guys. Dave, thanks a lot for coming on. People can go see you on Statman Dave.
Yeah, Statman Dave on Twitter. Rebranded, refaced, reskinned, more passion, more fun.
Chris, people can go find you as well. You've written some great stuff and obviously been tweeting well from our account this past week.
Yes, at KHENEAGE. We've got the Torgan Hazard piece. I also did something on Usman Mane, the Werder Bremen youngster that has gone from being a refugee in Germany to a Bundesliga match winner in 2 years.
Excellent stuff. It's been fantastic to have you all. Keep tweeting in the hashtag #IAmTheHolger. Follow us on Twitter @TheFront3. And let Adam know that you missed him tonight @AdamBoltwood. Just a good guy. We love you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And we'll see you again real soon on TF3.